This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 41 of the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe through RSS, via iTunes, via email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, or leave a voicemail message in two ways and appear on the show yourself, by calling 0844 579 649 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a voicemail straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you have a smartphone, you can download the free Stitcher.com app and listen that way. I'd be interested to know if anyone's tried the new Apple Podcasts app. Please let me know. It makes it a lot easier to subscribe to the show without having to go through iTunes. As I record this episode, Yes are back out on the road in the US. They've played one show already, which, to be honest, has received mixed reviews, so we're looking forward to some much better feedback as the tour progresses. This week I have grasped the proverbial nettle and have decided to take a listen to the symphonic music of Yes from 1993. Years before Magnification, Yes's music was given the full orchestral treatment in this album, which I've mentioned several times over the weeks in the podcast. I've never been a fan of the album, so I thought it was high time I attempted to listen without prejudice and let you know my honest opinion. It should be a great addition to the Yes catalogue. All the signs are very encouraging. When you pick up the CD, there's a great Roger Dean painting on the front, even if the reproduction on my copy is rather dark, and the lettering is definitely not a Roger Dean creation. The sleeve notes fold out into almost the size of an LP, and it doesn't end there. What catches the eye of the dedicated Yes fan immediately are the photographs. There's Steve Howe sitting on his favourite stool, there's Bill Bruford and John Anderson standing with the London Community Gospel Choir, and there's David Palmer conducting the London Philharmonic, Tim Harries tuning up his bass, and Alan Parsons playing with the sliders on the mixing desk. Yes, that Alan Parsons. What a lineup! Production on the CD is credited to Steve Howe alongside David Palmer, so we should be in for a real treat. Glancing at the track listing is also an encouragement. It reads like a fan's dream concert set list. Many of us who wondered what Yes music would be like rearranged for orchestra were very excited to see this album appearing in 1993, and I remember it being a huge bonus to see the actual members of the band who had been involved. So let's see what it's actually like. Track one is Roundabout and features the tantalising prospect of, in addition to the orchestra, John Anderson on vocals, Steve Howe on guitars and backing vocals, Bill Bruford on drums, Tim Harries on bass, Julian Colbeck on Hammond organ solo, David Palmer on synthesizer and vocoder, and Keith West on backing vocals. It always amuses me to see how many musicians it takes to reproduce the work of five individuals. Anyway, the opening backwards chords from the original recording are reproduced well by the orchestra, and Steve Howe is, of course, brilliant at adding his own guitar introduction, as we would expect. Then drums, bass and orchestra come in. Immediately I feel ill at ease. There's something about David Palmer's orchestration that just doesn't work for me. Is it the recording, maybe? Tim Harries does a creditable job of imitating Chris Squire's bass lines, but you know it's not the maestro himself. Bill Bruford's drums also sound odd and somehow out of place. Even if he's not using electronic drums and the photo in the sleeve notes clearly shows an acoustic setup, the recording makes them sound synthesized. John Anderson's vocal line does much to save the day, and there are some added digital echo effects which work well. However, the main theme is taken up by the orchestra again, which has me running for cover. The Magnification arrangements just seem to fit better with the rock instruments, and I find I'm putting up with the orchestra and longing for Anderson and Howe to come in again. The In and Around the Lake section is actually much better, with Howe's backing vocals giving a solid foundation to the sound, and the violins taking Wakeman's keyboard patterns effectively. As the track progresses, I'm getting more used to the sound. Howe's solo section in the middle is beautifully performed, and when Anderson joins him, it's a lovely moment supported by woodwind. When the main orchestra comes in again, I experience more of the same general unease about the arrangement, though. The Hammond organ solo is a bit of a non-event, and there seems to be an unconvincing and jarring key change, which just stops short of inducing nausea in the listener. The music moves back into the chorus effectively, however, and the vocal wordless section features Anderson in fine form. So a very patchy start. Next in line is Close to the Edge, which begins with the original sound effects. There's no John Anderson on this track, so the mind boggles as to how it's all going to work. The orchestra brings in the opening melodic figure in a pleasant manner, which doesn't stray too close to Mantovani and his cascading strings, and with the addition of Howe and Bruford, it rolls along nicely. David Palmer's synthesizer parts add an authentic feel to the texture, and we're soon at the point where Anderson's vocal line enters. Of course, without any vocalists on this track, the melody line and the backing parts have to be taken by orchestral instruments, in this case strings. I was expecting to dislike this arrangement, but in fact it works rather well, and the orchestral interludes between verses are particularly effective. The strings play with appropriate gusto, and the inflections of the original line are reinterpreted well. However, I'm initially less impressed when the brass take over the main role. With slightly odd ballroom-style percussion accompaniment, it all sounds a bit like wallpaper music for a short time. Fortunately, the strings are soon back, and Bruford's masterful, restrained and precise drumming adds more of a Yes feel. Tubular bells provide a pleasant additional colour, and Howe's original parts are well integrated. The drama and poise of the music are allowed to live through some good use of the full forces at the orchestral arranger's disposal. Howe duets with flute in a peaceful and pleasant section, and the contrasts inherent in the music are on full display. The main material comes back again, and an oboe solo is tastefully integrated. I Get Up, I Get Down is highly effective, even without the vocals, and it's clear that this is music of substance, of integrity with a marvellous sense of structure, which is presumably why it succeeds in this orchestral arrangement. We jump forward in the Yes catalogue now to Wondrous Stories, which you probably already know is not my favourite Yes song. Howe and Bruford are present alongside Tim Harries and David Palmer again. The initial choice of flute for the vocal line is perhaps a little weak, and if it wasn't for the Howe guitar line, it would all seem a bit saccharine. Howe takes the vocal line up with a slightly awkward-sounding solo, but overall it's quite an enjoyable track. The natural ebb and flow of the original is preserved and enhanced by the use of strings and brass, and there's a pleasing church bell-like augmentation towards the end. Like the original track, it's over in a flash, and I think it might have been possible to extend it to explore some more interesting orchestral colours. I've Seen All Good People features John Anderson alongside the London Community Gospel Choir, and I'm reminded of the use of a choir on Someone to Love by Queen after Mercury's death. The brass on this track are a bit too close to a soul or pop horn section for my liking, but Bruford is in his element, with his own drum part, and Anderson is well supported by the gospel choir, who manage a decent rendition of the chorus in a fun and jaunty fashion. The orchestra are employed appropriately in the main, and Howe and Bruford add the other essential Yes ingredients. This is, of course, only the All Good People section of the song, and it works less well starting from halfway through the structure of the piece. Howe's solo section sounds great against the strings and brass of the orchestra. In full flow with all the forces combining, this is enjoyable stuff, and the a cappella section is a great contrast when the triumphant chorus returns. The ending is also effective, with choir and instrumentalists bringing the mood down in a satisfying way. Next we move on to Mood for a Day, which is intriguingly credited on the sleeve notes to Steve Howe and the English Chamber Orchestra, the other orchestral ensemble on the record. There's a lot of reverb on Howe's guitar, and the orchestra accompany him with musical comments and interjections on strings. This actually adds some pleasant colour to the sound. Clearly I'm a huge fan of Howe's solo guitar spots in live concerts, but this is at the very least an interesting take on the maestro's work. The arrangement is appropriate to the original feel of the piece and doesn't become overbearing, which lets Howe's beautiful melodic lines shine through where they should. In the quicker sections they add a sense of excitement, and overall it's a very enjoyable augmentation of the original. In a moment of peace and calm after the end of this track, we try to prepare ourselves for what's coming next. Owner of a Lonely Heart, featuring Steve Howe, and we all know how much he enjoys playing this song, Bill Bruford, potentially out of his comfort zone, Tim Harries trying to replicate Chris Squire, David Palmer on a variety of keyboards, and no vocalist. Putting all that aside, how does it work? Well, Howe and Bruford try their best with the opening, but it sounds a little bit unconvincing, to be honest. I'm not sure 80s stadium pop rock lends itself to reinterpretation like this. Squire's trademark opening bass swoop is muted when performed by Harries, and the parts you might have expected to be great, the orchestral stabs, are far too restrained and lack impact. Strings take and the marimba part just adds to the faintly comical impression. Trumpets take up the melody while Howe sounds slightly embarrassed to be playing power chords, and Bruford plugs away in the uncharacteristic keeper of the beat role. After about 2 minutes, I'm looking forward to the end of the track. Actually, the more lyrical section after 2 minutes works better, and Bruford provides a nice set of fills to lead to the Rabin solo. This is shared between orchestral instruments, keys, and Howe. It's frankly a bit odd-sounding. Squire's soaring bass solo moment is competently played, but lacks the hallmarks of his style. Howe tries his best to inject a bit of passion and excitement, but by this time I'm just looking forward to the next track. Not a successful translation, and the ending with its sudden contrived orchestral chords feels like the musicians, as well as me, just wanted to forget about the preceding 4 minutes and 43 seconds. Survival is next, and I have more confidence about this being attempted. The line-up is the same as the previous track, with the addition of the Gospel Choir and the English Chamber Orchestra again instead of the LPO. This arrangement is, at least initially, an object lesson in how to enhance an existing song. Flute adds a counter-melody, strings add depth to the texture, and French horns are a lovely colour choice. The vocal line is played by solo cello in a beautiful, sensitive and tender manner. A great choice and a great performance. The bass line is also added in a mellow and appropriate way. Flute adds more variation in the timbre of the vocal line, and then the gospel choir enter with the chorus. It's a lovely moment, and the original interweaving vocal lines are performed with obvious commitment and understanding. Howe takes up the theme on acoustic guitar, which also works well. It all serves to remind me what a spellbinding song Survival is, an overlooked masterpiece. Howe's addition of a bit of a fuzzy set of guitar chords are a slightly odd choice, but are integrated so are not too off-putting. The ending is also great fun, with the little running lines shared around various instruments. Overall, Survival is a satisfying, immersive, and rewarding treat. There are now three long-form tracks to finish the album, starting with Heart of the Sunrise. The opening riff is well handled and benefits from unison playing by double bass and other instruments. Bruford adds his own drum part, which is lovely to hear in its proper place, with all its intricacy, idiosyncratic flourishes, and embellishments. It's a tantalising opening with some great orchestration choices. The faster section featuring Howe also works well as the orchestra swells to support the mood and then breaks down to support where we expect Anderson's lyrics to enter. In fact, we get Howe accompanying himself with the lead line on acoustic guitar. As you would expect, this is played in fine style by Howe, and the louder sections sound convincing, with orchestra filling in for keyboards. There are occasions when Bruford adds drum parts which combine with orchestra to produce sections which are dangerously close to your 100 best Yes tunes, played by the Smooth Classics Ensemble, but the complexity of the material saves the situation. Just. Bass lines are not added in Squire style, but are accurate enough and with just enough prominence to complete the proper Yes texture. It's good to hear Rick Wakeman's piano solo passage at about 5 minutes 20 seconds, reproduced on an actual piano, and I find myself tapping my foot and enjoying the trip through this most captivating and compulsive music. I like the woodwind writing in places. This epic complex music is very well handled here, and once again reminds us of its stature. The ending is also exciting, and I do find myself appropriately emotionally drained by listening, if, understandably, not quite as much as when I listened to the original. Reading the sleeve notes for the penultimate track worries me. Soon, and as last week I'm interested to see the title used on its own, is performed by the same mix of musicians as the previous piece, but features Steve Howe on spoken words from original lyrics. This unfortunately conjures up for me Howe doing something approaching a William Shatner. I really hope not. In reality, it's not too bad at all. Howe begins almost straight away against an atmospheric orchestral accompaniment. While he might not be Anthony Hopkins, his short spoken passage is not cloying or embarrassing and sets the tone for the piece. The orchestra add a cinematic quality to the introduction, and then Howe brings in his traditional pedal steel part with the Soon theme. This works well against the orchestra, which is doing a passable impression of Wakeman's keyboard part. Howe continues where Anderson would have come in, and there's a decent piano part complementing the bass line and the overall texture. It's all very successful, and gives Howe the chance to swap between instruments, coming back to the slide guitar for the original parts. The dramatic use of orchestration is particularly effective for the big keyboard section towards the end, and fades away in spine-tingling fashion. This version of Soon is surprisingly good without lyrics, and shows once again the breadth and grandeur of the original music. So, finally, we reach the last track on the album, Starship Trooper. This song also has an opening which suits the orchestra. It is grand and majestic in the original and in this version. Howe's lines fit with the strings and brass, who take the vocal lines very nicely, and that Squire bass line is high enough in the mix to fulfil its essential role. This is again very exciting music, and I'm tapping my foot along to it. There's great use of offbeat figures in the orchestra, which contrast to great effect with the guitar lines. The drum parts are amongst the most successful here, not sticking out, rather integrated into the whole tone picture. So at about 3 minutes 30 seconds, Howe starts that wonderful build-up, and I'm really looking forward to hearing how this is handled with full orchestra, particularly the denouement of the axe solo. It starts well, and the bass guitar part is sufficiently rasping and dirty to keep me happy. It's great to hear Bruford back on the drum stool for this passage. Orchestral parts are added to the mix, and the mood grows more insistent. It's never really going to be quite the same without Squire, but it's pretty good. When Howe enters with the climactic solo, I'm not quite ready, which means the build-up didn't quite get there. However, the solo is a great rendition against this orchestral accompaniment, and Bruford is enjoying himself with some magnificent and precise fills. When the music fades away to nothing, I'm pleased with this effort, although I would be happiest if the build-up lasted 30 minutes and the play-out another 20. But I realise that's asking far too much. So, overall then, I was pleasantly surprised at how much of the symphonic music of Yes I enjoyed. I remember being much less impressed by it when I first purchased it. There are cringe-worthy aspects, notably Owner of a Lonely Heart, but with a little bit of light CD player or MP3 player programming, you can eliminate the distractions. However, I still do find myself asking the crucial, unavoidable question. Why? Why would you want this collection of rearranged Yes music when you can listen to the originals, which are in every case far better than these versions? It is interesting to hear the music in orchestral arrangements, and as I have said, it proves what we all knew anyway, that Yes music is good enough to exist in its own right. Its structure, integrity, and genre-defying quality shows through here. But in the end, if I had the choice, I would always listen to the originals, or at a push, the orchestral arrangements which were produced for the Magnification Tour. I wonder if the difference with the latter arrangements is that they were made essentially to complement the band rather than to replace key roles, apart from some of the keyboard role, of course. You are left with the best of both worlds. Squire, Anderson, Howe and White are there, supplying their crucial Yes ingredients, and where keyboards are essential, they have been added by session musicians. In the symphonic music of Yes, I find myself longing to hear Squire's real bass sound, Anderson's real vocals, or Wakeman's real keyboards. I know this isn't the point of the project, but I'm really struggling to see what the point is. Anyway, please do let me know what you think. So that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. I'll be back next week with some more Yes music. In the meantime, please get involved by leaving a comment on the blog, www.yesmusicpodcast.com, sending a tweet or direct message to @yesmusicpodcast on Twitter, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading an audio file or recording a voice message via the buttons on the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.